2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me this week is Ian Kundle, filling in for Dylan, I think, for one more week. And he's going to be back. He's got some stuff in the works. He's got the Robo Scout fired up, all that good stuff. Baseball's upon us, man. We got some games starting up this weekend. I think Saturday are the first like real spring training games against actual MLB teams, not the scrimmages against college.
You're not excited for the Northeastern game tomorrow or the University of Minnesota game?
No, I want to see those schools play actual games against other colleges. That's what I'll be watching. But yeah, you know, it feels like ball is back in. So we're going to get right into it. We don't need to break down a bunch of news. We did that last week. We'll catch up on some of that stuff in the future. We're going to be talking through some top prospects in each division, each team over the next like 6 weeks. We're going to start with the AL East today. We're going to start with the Tampa Bay Rays. The way that we're going to lay this out, we're going to talk about a 2026 contributor, both Ian and myself. Talk somebody in the system that we believe has the highest upside, and then another guy that we feel might be an underrated player. And we'll do that for all five teams in the AL East. And as I said, Ian, we're going to start with the Tampa Bay Rays. So I'm going to give you first pick here on the 2026 contributor. There's a couple of options with the Rays.
There are. Thankfully, by giving me the first pick, you gave me the obvious option, and that is Jacob Melton, who the Rays obviously recently acquired this season via trade from the Astros, where he was the Astros' number one prospect. He's not the Rays' number one prospect. Someone else is that we'll talk about a little later. But I think Melton, obviously he made his big league debut last year. Almost, I think he only barely qualified for the list. But his there was some really good underlying data with him, especially when he was in AAA. And I think that what we saw in the majors was not the real him. He obviously had some injury last season. He had his struggles, but I still like him long-term. And I think he's the type of player that, to me, the Rays will put him in the situation to succeed. I think that's something they're really good at with their young players is he's not going to get exposed to, you know, certain types of lefties that he's going to struggle against, certain type of pitchers. They're going to maximize playing in a way that I think is beneficial for fantasy owners. And so I think he's the type of player that could have a really, you know, I don't think he's going to be an impact player, but I think on a per game base, I think he could be a useful player in fantasy this season.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think he's probably the obvious choice. And he also feels very much like a Rays player that they're going to put him into the best possible situations in terms of the types of arms that he's facing, all that. He's a good defender. He runs really well, does all the little things really well. And he's always been able to hit, even if it is a bit of an unusual swing. For my pick, I'm going to play one of my deep league 40-man roster favorites this year. If you need catchers, I have 130 team league where this guy's still prospect eligible, but he's on the 40-man roster. That's Dom Keegan, former Vanderbilt standout, mm-hmm. New Hampshire, Granite State legend, Dom Keegan. The power is really good, Ian. The plate skills are a little iffy, but it's a catcher. And yep. I'm just hoping him to, you know, hit 230 with some bomb. I could deal with that. The Rays and the Rays catching situation isn't exactly ripe with options. So if he continues to prove that he can stick behind the plate, I do think there's some upside here. I think he underproduced his numbers a little bit. If you look at quality of contact, he had really high quality of contact this year, catches tons of barrels, pulls the ball hard in the air consistently. His hard hit launch angles are really good. 107.2 90th percentile EV, 91.6 average EV. He's played in the upper minors. He's on the 40-man roster. I'm not going to overthink it. And I try not to overpay for catchers. So Dom Keegan kind of falls right in line with the types of catchers that I go after. Just kind of get a bunch of them, play some upside, and hope one of them figures it out. Sometimes you end up with William Contreras doing that. I'm just saying. We're going to snake it, Ian, all right? Highest upside now in the Rays system. I'm going to go with my guy, Brody Hopkins. We've talked about this extensively. We've written about this extensively. And I think it translates to fantasy as well. And you might even be able to add a little color to this too. But the strike throwing continues to improve. It's improved tremendously from when he was an amateur. I think it's important to remember this guy was a two-way player that kind of leaned positional side early in his college career, then took a big step forward when he transferred to Winthrop and was really primarily a pitcher. So it's only been a few years that he's been a primary pitcher, dominant stuff. It's Brody Hopkins. Fastball, velocity-wise, angles-wise, in terms of flat vertical approach angle, really tricky when it's located at the top of the zone. One of the flattest fastballs above 95 miles an hour in professional baseball. It's a really unique fastball, but the selling point is actually the secondaries. It's incredible curveball, tons of movement, and it's really, really hard. It's rare that you see a curveball, a true curveball that's sitting 88 miles an hour or touch 90. Hopkins has one, as well as a variety of other breaking ball shapes, pretty decent changeup. And the strike throwing and getting deeper into games has continued to get better. And the Rays coax that out of pitchers as well as anybody in the game. So I'm pretty confident with him. But I do think if everything clicks and we get to the point where he has above average command, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, he could be a true dominant front of the rotation type arm. Like, the upside is there because the stuff is so good. I don't know if you have anything else to add on Hopkins or if you want to jump in with your pick here.
Yeah, no, I agree on everything. I saw Hopkins last spring training and he was probably the best arm I saw all that entire spring. And the arm talent is immense. The athleticism stands out. And as you said, it's the combination of the fastball shapes and then the quality of the secondary. You know, this is a guy who has, there's supreme upside here. It's just a matter of how many strikes is he going to consistently throw and how is he going to be able to command his pitch. And if he does, yeah, I think, you know, you're looking at a number two starter type. My pick is going to be on the position player side of the ball. And it's Seth Gillen, who was the Rays' first round pick back in 2024. Spent last year in Charlestown. Hit 67 with a 433 on base, only a 387 slug. But I think the calling card here is I think he can really hit, and I think he's going to get on base. And I think that combination I'm going to trust because the power, he's 6'2". I think it'll come eventually. But if he hits like, you know, we have a potential plus hit two on him. If he hits like that, then this is a guy who's going to be a very valuable fantasy player, regardless of where he plays defensively. Because I think that's could arguably one of the things holding him back in terms of overall prospect list is the defense. You know, there's some question marks about that, but especially because of his arm strength. But don't count that fantasy as long as he's got playing time, which I think he will, because I think he's really going to hit. And so I think that he's someone who the upside there, you know, he's got a potential chance to impact that. And the power is going to dictate the ceiling here, whether it gets to, you know, 50, anything higher, or if it settles more in the 45 range. But even if he's a 4-5 power guy, I think he's a potential first division regular.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, like, you look at the size of Gillen and, you know, the EVs are already well above average for his age. It's just a matter of getting to a little bit more angles. The angles aren't bad, though. Like, it was a 12.2 degree launch angle, 13.6 in the hard hits. So that's 95 plus balls in play, and then a 5.2 on pull. It's like, it's not bad. I think he can get to more power. And I think the other thing, too, is we might see more of it as he moves up, gets into better hitting environments. Like, that league, and we've talked about this before, the Carolina League is a really tough place to hit for power. I don't care what park you're in and how short the fences are. There just seems to be like thicker air, like a marine layer type of situation or something going on. And that stuff matters, man. I think people forget like how much these environments, you know, particularly in the minor leagues and the lower minors, you know, there's no humidor. There's no one trying to fix the effects. There's no one putting up, you know, something out in right field to block the wind gust that comes in and knocks, like, well, whatever it is. They're not fixing.
Well, Worcester did that.
Well, Worcester's also probably like is a Janet Marie Smith designed minor league ballpark.
Oh, right? It's like the nicest minor league ballpark there is.
It's like it's like the Louis Vuitton of of minor league ballparks, like that Hartford and some other ones that maybe Charlotte, a few others I haven't been to that I know I've heard great things about. So you want to miss anybody? Let's go to underrated player here because we're snaking it. You get to go first, Ian. Who's your underrated Ray prospect?
It's a tricky one because I have a couple that I like, and I'm going to zag and not pick the person that I originally was going to. And I'm going to go with this is, I know, a J.J. Coop favorite too. It's Nathan Flewelling. He's a catcher. He's hovering, I think he's 10th on the Rays list right now, prior to trade, so he might be just outside the top 10 after the date. And he's a catcher. And we talked about with Keegan that catcher, the bar is so low. If you can get any sort of offensive potential with a catcher, and that's very valuable in fantasy. And I think that Flewelling held his own as an 18-year-old. He had 230, 393, 341 in low A. What you talk, park factors apply again here. But really intriguing impact potential. 105.1 90th, 109.7 max EV, which for, and he combines that with a really patient approach, 18% chase rate, 20% walk rate last year. That combination of approach and power is really intriguing to me, a catcher. And if he can just kind of, if he just hits enough, I think there's a chance that he's someone who, frankly, next year could be pushing maybe like the top 100 fantasy prospects. I think there's a lot of upside here with him long term. It's just a matter of, he's a young kid and it was just taking some time to figure it out. And I think that last year was a good first step, and it's kind of flying under the radar, especially because he's a Canadian high school kid who signed really young. And I feel like that's the archetype is a little bit of a later bloomer. So I think he's someone that could take a really big step forward this season.
Yeah, and he's a phenomenal athlete on top of that. So I think there's a lot of projection there. All the numbers kind of underneath the hood were better than the slash line was. Another guy that kind of got trapped in, you know, that particular league and the park effects and all that sort of stuff. Somebody who benefited from it is going to be my pick, and that's Jose Urbina. Right-handed pitcher, made it up to high A at the end of the year. Had a phenomenal season, though. Made 20 starts, 2.15 ERA, 3.42 xFIP. Struck out a little bit over a batter an inning, 26.6% K rate, 7.9% walk rate. The Rays, once again, with guys who throw strikes with really good stuff. He sat 96.2 as a 19-year-old. He turned 20 years old at the beginning of November. So he will be 20 for all of this year, 21 for all next year. He's a guy that's moved fairly quickly, still has a couple years left in terms of his 40-man roster date. So probably not a debut until like 28. But somebody who's really good stuff, you know, kind of a cutterish, gyro-y, mid-80s slider that I think maybe projects to add a couple of ticks. You could do something with it. Decent spin traits. He gets the curveball up at like 2,800. Averages like 2,600 RPM. So there is some spin there. A little bit more of like a sweeper curveball at 80, but kind of interesting. And then a really good changeup, good vertical separation off of the fastball, not a ton of velocity separation, but it plays. He got whiffs pretty consistently with the slider, with the curveball, with the changeup, gets a ton of chases off this fastball and his changeup. It's a pretty good mix, kind of a lower release height guy, gets good extension, a little bit more than his height. So I'd say about above average is probably the bucket I would put the extension in. So kind of has all the traits there and a lot of strike throwing with enough stuff, enough release traits. He's somebody that, you know, 6'3", 6'4", decent build, still projectable, already has good mechanics and stuff. Kind of betting a little bit on Jose Urbina. I think he's one of the more interesting arms in the Rays system.
Without a doubt. Yeah, that's a good, I mean, they have a lot, I feel, of those under the radar pitching types, and they've done a very good job of elevating them. So I think that's a really good one, especially given I really like guys that have that combination of stuff you said, but also don't walk guys already. Like JJ had a fact about him that he had walked zero or one batters in 20 starts. That's, I think, a lot to build on. And we've seen the Rays have had success with that type of pitcher before. Someone like Santiago Suarez comes to mind. So, yeah, I like that. That's a really good pick.
All right, let's move on to the Baltimore Orioles now, Ian. Orioles are an interesting team because they've made some upgrades on the Major League roster this year. They've went and spent some money, brought in Pete Alonso. They've added some players to the, you know, Chris Bassett. They added Shane Baz. So the rotation's a little bit deeper. But let's talk about some 2026 contributors. I think there's some two obvious ones. I'll go first here. I'll leave you same with Basayo. I'm going to go with Dylan Beavers. The same question you have with Basayo like I have with Beavers, to this extent, is it going to be full-time at-bats? or is it going to be more of a strong side platoon, you know, as the left-handed bat in a platoon setup? I think it's possible for both of them. There's a lot of mouths to feed. Tyler O'Neill is still making pretty decent money. And, you know, as a seasoned veteran, there's a lot to like with Beavers. I think the ceiling for some folks might be imagined to be a little bit higher than what I think it really is in reality. He was good down the stretch in MLB, 35 games, hit 227, but 375 on base percentage, 400 slug with four home runs and some stolen bases, really high walk rate. I think he's going to get his walks. I think, you know, with enough at bats, you're looking at 15 to 17 home runs and maybe 10 to 12 steals. Could score some runs and be valuable. But I do think the risk that you run with Dylan Beavers is full-time playing time in 2026. And we're talking about him as a 2026 contributor. I don't know what your thoughts are on Beavers, Ian. I feel like it's a lot of good skills, nothing to me that's really outlier, including the hit tool.
Yeah, I think that's my issue, is that I think there's a lot of platoon risk with him, especially with the way the roster is constructed. I mean, you look at the number of right-handed hitting outfielders or kind of corner guys they have is way too many, frankly. And this is Bassaio is going to run into the same issue, which we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, I'm not as high as on Beavers as others. I think that there's the swing is a little wonky. I think that the way that he gets to it, like I think he's going to take his walks, but I don't think the tools play as loud as they look on a spreadsheet, and they never have. And I think with guys like that, I'm going to need to see it to believe. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But he's someone to me that I think, you know, there's definitely questions this year about his playing time, and frankly, even going forward, I'm not sure he's an F profile.
All right, now who's your pick? Is it Bassaio?
I mean, it has to be Bassaio. You know, he's one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. And even, and this is, you know, thankfully again for fantasy, really care defense as long as he's got playing time, because I think my biggest concern with him as an actual prospect is where is he going to play? Because is he a catcher or not? I think is still up for debate. For now he can play it. But long-term, I think there are definite questions talking to scouts. You know, there are some who are very skeptical about that. It's a big boy. You know, it's right now he moves okay back there, but how is that body going to age? The arm is obviously really good. That's the arm talent is there. Then that's, you know, that's a saving grace for him behind the plate. But if he moves to first base, is he still going to be a viable fan contributor? Absolutely. Like the offensive upside potential here is really big, but it's not going to be as much as it is if he's a catcher, or at least maintains catcher eligibility. So here at least he's gonna, I actually don't know if he qualifies as catcher now that I'm about to say that. I'm actually not sure he does, but I think that he's gonna, they found a way to have a role for him. You know, this is a guy who, if he hits like we all think he can, he's probably one of the better power hitters in the rookie class, and it's a potential above average hit tool. And you combine those two things, you know, you look at his data, the EVs are insane. Max or 90th is 108.3. Max EV is 115.9. His average EV is 94.2. You know, those are some Roman Anthony like numbers. And we saw what Anthony was able to do in the big leagues last year. So Bassaio can get up to the majors, or if he makes the opening day roster, and you have those EVs, his impact ability combined with the angles, it's a really interesting profile offensively. I think there's going to be a lot of swing and miss, and that's going to be the limiting factor. And I think ultimately that's probably going to determine his playing time this year, is how much contact he makes, because there is some juice in his game. The contact is more average-ish, I think, than above. But if he takes walks, he'll make up for some of the swing and miss. And as long as he's impacting baseball, I think that he'll get playing time. So I think that Bassaio is someone who, with the way the Orioles are constructed, even after acquiring a long, there's still a pathway to him getting, you know, 400 plus plate appearances this year.
I thought the chase was concerning, though.
It's right on the, like, yeah, it's about 30%.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous. I think it was close to 40%. He's got to really cut down on that if, you know, he's going to sustain that level of production that we saw in the minors. I think that's a tweak, though. I think that's some of that is just, you know, end of a long season, being overwhelmed in a big spot, trying to make some stuff happen. And maybe you swing at some pitches that you typically wouldn't. And he's already an aggressive hitter, so that's all part of the package. When we move on now to highest upside, in the system? Are you doubling up on Bisaccia, or do you have another player in mind?
It's tricky because I mean, Bisaccia probably is it, but it's hard. I want to go back to the same well again. But I think in this situation, it's warranted just because of the level of the caliber of prospect Bisaccia is. And by the way, you're right on the chase that at the majors, it was around 40% overall for the year. It was around 32%. So definitely some warning signs there. But I mean, this is, I think the defense comes in, because if he's a catcher with his offensive upside, you know, this is a guy who could probably contend for what, top catcher in fantasy baseball over the next few years. You know, if you were doing that draft, is Carter Jensen's the name you probably throw in the mix there? Like Contreras obviously would still be in it, but he's on a short list. And with how little production and how quickly there is a drop off a catcher, I think that Bisaccia's ceiling at the behind the plate, if he can stick there, even enough game to qualify, has to keep him on the list above of. I looked at the other options. There's some interesting arms, but yeah, this is a guy who, you know, if he hits his ceiling, he's a 65 probably. You know, this is a well above average regular, and I don't think the Orioles have anyone else in the system with that kind of ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if I'm gonna zig here a little bit, just to make it interesting and have another name to throw out there. But I think the easy answer, the honest answer is same with Bisaccia. I'm gonna go with Esteban Mejia. It's huge stuff. He's still super, super young. Came stateside last year, made his full season debut. The command still needs to come a long way. He's not in the zone enough, particularly with his big fastball. But this is a guy that sat 98 miles an hour, you know, hit 101.9. So it wasn't technically 102. We'll round up on that one. Has two fastball shapes. He will, you know, throws the four seamer and the sinker. Sinker's actually a little bit better. Hard slider, gyro slider, has a changeup too. There's some feel for spin, not outrageous. He's, you know, sort of a more of a pronator, but it's an interesting mix. I think if you can coax more strikes out of it, there could be a starter here as well. But it's going to have to be velo, and it's going to have to be better command, because some of the release traits are just okay. He doesn't get down the mound that well. It's not big extension. You can get a little bit more out of him probably. But it is a lower release height. It's 5'6". It's a lower arm slot, and he throws smoke. Probably ends up a reliever if I had to put money on it. But I do think if you're thinking upside here, you're thinking, you know, everything gets maxed out, 90th percentile outcome, it's probably Esteban Mejia on the pitching side at least. So I'm going to go with that one. Let's pivot over to underrated player. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite underrated players. And honestly, I think it's just a matter of him lifting the ball a little bit more. And that is Arun Estrada, second baseman. He's played a few different positions. You know, he's seen some time in the outfield, but probably a second baseman long-term. It's a bat. It's very much a fantasy kind of a prospect, but he can really hit. And, you know, I think when I look at a player like this, I'm looking at really good EVs. I'm looking at excellent contact skills, a 16% in zone contact rate. Does chase a little bit, but it's a higher swing rate. So it's decent swing decisions, attacks a lot of pitches in the zone, 105.6 90th percentile. It is a 20-year-old switch hitter. We know that some of the inconsistencies there, especially with two swings in terms of the power from both sides of the plate, he's pretty consistent. Angles aren't great. Not a guy that's pulling the ball in the air a whole lot. Some of that is going to be, you know, which side of the plate we're looking at. And I have numbers that are blended, so I'll keep that in mind. But I do think, you know, you look at the production, you look at the fact that he runs, you look at the underlying power that's there. It's not a matter of him completely reworking the swing, just kind of changing a couple of things in terms of that approach angle, just a little tweaks. I think he can get to more power, and we could be talking about like an 18 home run guy with 25 steals, something like that. Really low strikeout rates, you know, got up to double A this year for 27 games, hit 288, 366, 447 across 108 games. That was between predominantly high A, and then, as I mentioned, that 27 game sample at the end of double A. Where, by the way, he hit 300, 355, 500 in the Eastern League with five home runs in those 27 games and some steals. So some power, some steals, low strikeout rate, maybe not going to set the world on fire in terms of the walk rate, but could improve in terms of the swing decisions and some angles. I think he's a guy to gamble on a little bit because he's still not somebody that's being rated as a consistent top 100 prospect, depending upon who your league mates are reading. I'm kind of in on Ruan Estrada. I think he's an underrated player here in this Baltimore system. What say you, Ian, and who's your pick?
It's a really good shout. For me, the Orioles actually have a few guys who fit this mix. They had a lot of guys in the high minors last year who are right on that reliever starter cutoff. Guys like Braxton Bragg, Levi Wells. My choice is actually going to be Nestor Hermann. And the thing that I really like about Hermann is he's got a go-to secondary, a potential plus secondary, which I think it's someone like Wells, who is more of a fastball dominant pitcher. Hermann's splitter is legit. This is a pitch last year in the minors. It had a 46% whiff rate on pie usage. It was his third most used pitch, but you know, he's throwing it like 5% of the time or so. Really good separation from his fastball, 10 plus miles an hour. And it's a really legit, and he can actually like throw it for strikes in addition, or throw competitively enough that he can get chases with it too. It's chase rates above 30%. You combine that with a fastball, IVB was 21 inches last year. It's got some interesting shape characteristics there. It's not the fat, it's not the hardest fastball. You know, he sits in like the low to mid 90s, tops out around 97. But if he can take a step forward with his velo, and you combine that with multiple secondaries that can move bats, because he's also got a slider and that had a decent whiff rate last year. He's on a curveball. Like, it's a diverse arsenal. I could see this guy slotting in the back end of rotation, being, you know, like a number four starter for years to come. It's just a really nice around arsenal. And the splitter, I think, is a separator. I think it's a potential plus out pitch.
Yeah, I really like that pick. And I think there's, like you said, like, three or four guys kind of in the mix there with the Orioles that kind of all fit that like upside-y back end role that maybe there's more here than we even realize. And, you know, could be one of the things that sustains this run if some of these guys do matriculate up in the next year or so and turn out to be, you know, real major league contributors. All right, Ian, we're going to take a break, and then we come back. We're going to talk what you know best, that is Boston Red Sox prospects. We'll be right back after this. All right, and we are back. Jeff Ponce, Ian Kundle. We are talking AL East prospects for fantasy baseball. Thanks for joining us. We've already talked the Baltimore Orioles. We talked about the Tampa Bay Rays to open the show. We're moving on to the Red Sox here, Ian. I'm going to kick it off so that way you have first pick on highest upside, because I want to hear you talk about Justin Gonzalez. I'm going to keep it really simple here. I think, you know, Peyton Tolley, we'll see what the role is. It could be kind of a swingman situation where he's in a relief role where he pitches a couple of innings, maybe pitches out of some big spots against a lefty heavy lineup. I don't think that would be outrageous to see. And then make some starts maybe at certain points in the season when injuries or fatigue start to set in a little bit. But they do have obviously great starting pitching depth. So how this all shakes out is really funny, but I do think he's a guy that's going to miss a lot of bats in a relief role, even if it's maybe a couple of innings or five outs. It's just a nasty lefty fastball. I think the secondaries hopefully we'll see take a step forward this year. I know that's something he was working on. So I'm going to go with Tolley. I'm going to leave you Conley early if that's who you want to talk about here, because I think he might have a better chance of maybe being a starter this year. But I kind of like Tolley in that like Michael King Yankees role where like he gets 80 innings, but pitches in a bunch of roles and has starting pitching, relief pitching eligibility, and you can kind of move them around your lineup. So I'm going to go with Tolley. Why don't you tell me who you're picking? I assumed it was early, but maybe it's someone different.
No, it is going to be Connelly early. Cause I think early, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when he gets called up to the majors. You know, the Red Sox have said it's a fifth starter competition. Johan Oviedo is going to get the fifth starter role out of camp barring injury. But I think early is going to be that sixth starter, you know, right on the edge. And as soon as something happens or they need their pitcher, he's going to come up. And I think that he's got the stuff that once he comes up, I don't think he's going to relinquish that role. You know, this is a guy to me who profiles pure star. He took really, really big step forward last year. And he's someone who, you know, the fastball is on the light side. He's added a tick of velocity, and I think chance for more there, especially as the reports are he's gotten stronger this winter. He's added, you know, I think 10 plus pounds of muscle. So if he can maintain that and, you know, comes camping, it's something that we've talked about with Red Sox personnel before. If he can just maintain the velocity that he shows, especially early in camp, like last year, he was like 90 during the spring breakout game. For a left-handed pitcher, if he can be that instead of the 93, 90, 92, 93, 94 that he usually is, complete ceiling or just jumps big time because his quality of secondaries is legit. He's got multiple bat missing pitches. The changeup is the bread and butter, potential plus offering. But he's also got a super curveball slider. It's a bunch of different shapes. Can really miss bats with them. And we saw it in his big league debut. You know, he came, or his big league stint last year. You know, he came out and had four really good starts. Pitched against, you know, some good lineups. He made the A's lineup, which was one of the better ones in the second half of the year. Looked silly a few times. Had a bunch of strikeouts, 29 strikeouts in 19 big league innings. I don't think he could hold that for an entire season. But I think, you know, this is a guy who had mid-rotation upside. And sooner rather than later. So I think that, you know, if anything happens to the Red Sox starters, I could easily see a role where he throws, you know, 100 innings at the big league level this year.
All right. I agree. You know, I figured it was going to be one of the pitchers here, which is funny because that's what they went out and signed this offseason and acquired.
I know.
That's what they have.
So it's funny. It's funny when you think about it, because like how hyped would Ernie be in drafts right now and not, you know, if they had like traded Brian Bayo or then not done the Oviedo trade, if there was a clear lean to him to be the fifth starter on opening day, I feel like he would be someone that we'd be getting a high drafts, but because they obviously went out and did that, you know, he's, I feel like he might actually be decent value at the hedge, especially if you draft a Red Sox starter.
Yeah, no, I think you're completely right. All right, let's go to highest upside now. Who's your pick for highest upside, Ian?
Yeah, it's a fall because, I mean, you could probably make a case it's totally, but we're going to have some fun here and talk about Justin Gonzalez because he is one of the most unique position players in the minor, and he's listed at 6'4", 210. He's not 6'4". He is, I would guess, 6'7", 6'6", probably 200 pounds. Yeah, I see what you did there. There was a reason. But he mashes the ball. You know, this is a guy who's young for the level. Got up to high A last year as a 19-year-old, and his 90th percentile EVs are up there with, you know, MLB, good for MLB players. 106.7 90th, 113.1 max EV. And the thing that's so unique is with him is he doesn't at all. He combines extremely high EVs with a very low whiff rate because his swing isn't that long. It was a 24% overall rate last year, only 7% zone. He will chase a little bit. He's a little aggressive, which is understandable. He's a 19-year-old. But his impact ability is unique. It's, you know, there's no one else in the system other than Rome who has that type of impact ability. He was near the top of their prospect list. And the problem with him is just his angles are rough. The thing is, it's very short for a big guy. You don't see many 6'7" guys who have as long levers as he does that are as quick to the ball. And it works, and it elevates contact rate, but he gives off, the result is a very high ground ball rate. Ground ball rate last year was, I want to say, it was above 50, and doesn't pull the ball in the air consistently. The launch angles are low, and it's just, he's a swing, one swing change away from becoming, you know, one of the best power hitting prospects, I think, at the Red Sox system and potentially like the American League East. That's the kind of upside he has. It just requires that swing change. And, it, you know, early reports are from spring training that there might be a breakout happening. So I think he's someone, if you have a chance to get in early on him, it's worth it because the payoff here in the long term is substantial. Like this is a guy who could develop into one of the better power hitters in minor league baseball if he can make the necessary adjustments at the plate.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I left him for you because I know there's been, you know, some recent videos of, you know, a little bit more elevation, a little more loft in the bat path. And
the sky's fluid too.
Yeah. I think these are the kind of guys that you gamble on, right? Especially when they're really guys and there's a good athletic engine. That's the type of player that you want to gamble on because I don't want to be redundant. And I think that Gonzalez was obviously the best pick. I'm going to go with Juan Valera on the pitching side. So I'll mix it up. I'll go with the pitcher here. I think Valera is right in the mix in terms of talent and upside with any of these Red Sox arms we're talking about, including Peyton Tolley. You know, sits 96, 97 miles an hour, touches 100. You know, he's been up what, like 101, 102, I think, and maybe even some games you've seen him.
Yep. 101, I think, is the max.
It's kind of a cut fastball. It doesn't get a ton of ride. Maybe like to see a little more ride out of that pitch, but does get a ton of cut, throws it super hard. It's pretty freaky angles. He gets pretty decent extension down the mounds. He's in the zone a ton with that pitch. He's in the zone a ton with his slider as well. Gets in the zone with his sweeper. It strikes with power. Some feel for spin, different movement traits. He's got a changeup that moves arm side. He's got a sweeper that moves glove side. You know, he's got the slider in between, and he's got the cut, four seam or cut fastball. And he gets him in the zone. You know, the only one that's really truly a chase pitch, I would say, is the changeup. Just a matter of health, staying on the mound consistently. But there's a ton of upside here with Valera. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on him.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there's multiple that can miss bats. And I think that he's getting a little undervalued because he missed most of the last season with an injury. He only threw, I think, around like 40 innings ago. But, 38 innings. But I think it's a great choice. I think that he's someone who the fastball is loud, secondaries are good, and he throws a ton of strikes. And kind of going back to what we were talking about with Urbina, I really like guys with this type of profile who are already showing the aptitude to strikes. You know, that's something when we say, oh, you can develop it later, sometimes it doesn't come. But he's already got that baseline with the strike throwing that, you know, worst case, you're probably looking at can be a river. And then if he can stay in the rotation long term, there's very high ceiling here with his type of arsenal. He has the arm talent that, you know, these types don't grow on trees.
All right, let's move on to underrated player. It's kind of tough with some of these systems in terms of like who's actually underrated, because I feel like, you know, you guys obviously at Sox Prospects do such a good job of covering the system, and it's a fan base that's plugged into the minor leagues more than probably some other teams' fan bases are, especially the depth. But I'm going to go with Sad Bill Dalzine. I'm sure I butchered some part of that. But he was one of their big signings in the 2025 international class. Big 6'5" right-handed pitcher, debuted in the DSL. The numbers are like okay, but it was only 9.1 innings. Got hit maybe more than you would like. But I still think there is quite a bit to like here with Dalzine. The velo is really good for a younger pitcher, you know, sat 94 to 95, touching 96, 97, gets ride with some arm side run, not crazy extension. It's a higher release height, but generates the kind of prerequisite movement you need with a higher release height guy like this. And I don't think the release height numbers are always so precise. Has some feel for spin, has a couple of different breaking ball shapes. It's super far away, and it's a very small sample size that we're dealing with here. But I think somebody that we could look back in a couple of years and be like, all right, like this was a really nice ball of clay that, you know, the Red Sox pitching development turned into something. So we'll see, you know, how long he makes it in the system without getting traded. But I do think he's an interesting prospect. We're talking about some of the more underrated guys in the Red Sox system. Any thoughts on Dalzine? And who's your pick, Ian?
I think that's a great choice. He was someone who's been a lot of hype last season, but obviously he had a kind of a starter because of the injuries. But I think the raw upside is there, and I think the ball of clay comment is very apt because he's the Red Sox have done a really good job of evaluating pitchers who come in with a certain baseline of talent, and he's got that arm ability with the fastball velocity. Is, you know, 17-year-old who's already pitching in the high 90s and got a pretty good breaking ball too, and you know, the things that they're good at developing on is refining pitch shapes. They're one, I think, the better orgs at doing that. And they do a very good job just, I think, with maintaining their pitchers. You know, you look what they've done with Peyton Tolley, Connelly early, like so many guys take a step forward. And I think once Dalzine comes stateside, which should happen this year, I think he's a guy who could take a really big step forward, especially if he starts to show out in the FCL. So good buying opportunity here early on in the process. For me, I think there's a few that fit. I'm actually going to go a little more off the board though, because I think like Anthony Ianson, but he was a draftee last year, and he hasn't pitched yet at a pro ball, so there's not a lot of data there. Andy Azakar is another one who's one of my personal favorites, who I think takes a really big step forward. But I an underarm in the system that I really like is John Hollibets. He came over last year in the Quinn Priester trade. And his fastball is legit. You know, it's one of the better stuff, fastballs in the system. It's the shapes are really good. It's high IV, flat approach angle, really low release height, but also plus extension. And the issue with him last year, and he throws a ton of strikes with it. Like it was a 71% strike percentage last year. Big issue for him last year was secondaries were rough. You know, it's fringy below average secondaries. He's made some changes with those this year. And the early reports coming out of camp are that they might be taking. And if they take, I think that you combine his proximity. This is a guy who probably could be in the big leagues, I would say, in the next 2 years. And he has the baseline with the fastball, and it was just about finding secondaries. If he can improve, you know, with a bullet slider and a different changeup grip, those pitches even get to average, this is a guy who could be a back-end starter. And I think that there's a lot of value in profile major leagues, especially with a guy like him who throws a ton of strikes. You know, this guy's not going to walk guys. He's not going to kill you in the ratios. And I mean, we saw with Cutter Crawford, you know, this was Cutter Crawford, I think he gets forgotten a little bit because he's missed last season, but a couple of years ago, he's almost like a 3-WAR pitcher who had good ratios, you know, and just accumulating innings. And I think Hallebatz has a chance to be that type of profile, like a back end guy who throws a ton of innings because he throws a ton of strikes, doesn't walk guys, doesn't kill you in the ratios. And I think if he can just take that step forward with the secondaries, he's a really interesting fantasy play prospect in the future.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. Think he's super interesting, and you know the growth in the secondary side of things could turn him into another arm. They're chock full of them in the Red Sox system, so I think that's why we've gone to so many of them throughout this. We really only talked about one hitter. Let's move on to the
system now. Sorry. No, I was just saying that's their system now. It's very pitching heavy.
I think you're 100%, you know, spot on accurate with that. Let's move on to the next one here. That is the dreaded New York Yankees. All right, Ian, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You start us off. Who is your Yankees 2026 contributor?
It's an interesting one because I don't think, especially after this offseason, it's not the best system. But looking at the list right now, I would have to say Carlos Legarane, I believe I pronounced that correctly. I think it's another guy who the arm talent is there. He probably comes up as a reliever, but guys who throw as hard as he does, he's up to 102, 103 miles an hour. And I think there's already video out there from him spring training of facing, I think it was Aaron Judge or one of the other big league bats striking out. The fastball is huge. The sliders and there's secondaries that can miss bats, slider, cutter, sweeper, all potentially like above average. The strikes are a major question mark. And you know, it's a 6'7" frame, long lever. You know, it's the profile of a guy that the strike throwing is probably going to be consistent. But if he can ever harness his raw stuff, it's got to be probably the loudest stuff in the entire system. And like everything misses bats. you know, it's a bunch of pitches like that. Everything is hard, except it's pretty good. Like, you know, the sweeper has some good horizontal. Changeup has some depth. So, yeah, I think that it's just the ceiling is there, and I think he's probably going to up this year and has a chance to pitch in the bullpen probably later in the season. It might be someone who, you know, you can get some holds out of this year. The eye towards becoming a star future because the ceiling, if he can stick in the rotation, is pretty high in my opinion.
Yeah, and the way they've been positioning him, it wouldn't shock me if he's up even earlier than we think. He threw a lot more innings and way more strikes than I think people give him credit for, so – I love Legrandhe, and I think even when we're talking highest upside, we won't mention him, but I think he could kind of be an obvious answer there again. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a Rule 5 pick because it's in my blood. Shout out to my boy, J.J. Cooper. Cade Winquest came out of the Cardinals system, going to be in a relief role. Already seen some videos. They have him working with a new sinker. Always had velo in the arm. The release traits are pretty good. Good extension, just a matter of it doesn't really get behind the four seam and spin it efficiently. That's kind of always been an issue. Throws plenty of strikes. He's got feel for spin. You know, had three different breaking ball shapes and curveball, cutter, and a sweeper. Already has that. Yankees don't have to add it. I think adding that sinker, knowing what the arm talent is here, the fact that he does throw a fair amount of strikes, knows how to pitch. I think he could be an interesting like relief holds guy that you could maybe grab. We'll see if he makes it and sticks with the team or not. So there's some risk there. But I do think Cade Winquest is kind of an interesting one, if only for 2026 value. All right, let's move it on to the next one here. Highest upside, I'm going to keep it easy, man. I'm going to go with Dax Kilby. If you saw any more FYPD shows, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I just said that's your guy. You have to.
My guy, yeah. Had to go with Kilby. Huge athlete. Crazy good stuff. You know, when you're talking about speed, you're talking about power, you're talking about contact, swing decisions, needs to lift the ball a little bit more. We've talked about a few guys like that today. I think could even get to that in the next year. We could see it in camp. I haven't seen any video yet, so we'll see. Could be really, really, really interesting stuff. Going to go with Kilby there. I don't think I have to talk about it too much. Who's your pick, Ian?
I still believe in George Lombard Jr. I think the talent is still immense here. And I think that we saw the beginning of breakout last year in high A. He got aggressively pushed up to double A as a 20-year-old. Obviously, he's had some struggles there. But this is a guy who's 60. Good. He's really good athlete. He's the underlying data, I think, is stronger than you'd expect given his stat line. 3.290th, 111 max are both above average for his age. He doesn't chase, 16% chase rate last year. And I think just matter of if he can improve the angles and consistently pull the ball in the air. Because with his frame and his EVs, he should have power. I just think it's going to take some time to it. But if he can ever, you know, consistently pull the ball in the air, I think that there's a chance for, you know, average to above average hit and power here. And he's going to stay up. You have a shortstop with those kind of that upside at the plate. That to me is a potential everyday regular. And even though that his stock has fallen a little bit in fantasy, me he's someone I'm still very in on. And I think upside could be more, is going to be a reward to our patient here.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong on that, man. But yeah, we have to see what happens. I honestly wonder how he would have been viewed if he was like in high A until July, right? And then struggled in like August. Like people would look at him completely differently than they do. All right, it's your pick though, if I'm not mistaken, on the most underrated player in this Yankee system. We talked about this before the show off air. This was probably the toughest particular category of any team that we had to pick. So who's your pick here?
Yeah, I think there's only really two options. And I think they both are similar profiles in that they were highly pedigree international signings who have really struggled with injury over the last few years. So I'm going to take the position player here. I'm going to go with Brando Maia. I think he was off to a really hard last year, then he got hurt again, which has kind of been a something that's happened a lot in his career. He signed back in 2023 for $4.35 million, but the tools are still there. Like you look at the underlying data and there's some really good EVs here for his age, and 106.5 90th, 109.6 max. Angles need work, but that's understandable. It's just the contact is the question here. But it was such a small sample. I don't know, there might have been able to get more as the season went on. In the limit we have is under 100 plate appearances. Decent, fair contact rate was below 70%. In the whiff rate was above 25%. Chase rate was elevated. But the raw tools are there. The pedigree is there. The impact is there. It's just a matter of if he can hit or not. And, that's something that I think we're going to need to see more time from him. I'm willing to be patient because I think there could be a payoff if he can just show what a healthy season looks like for him.
Yeah, I think you're right. It'll be interesting to see how that translates because, they've had these international signees that signed for big money, decent amount of hype, and guys that just don't pay off. Like Roderick Arias is obviously one that comes to mind. Somebody that played in the FCL with Roderick Arias, Henry Luane, big 6'7" lefty. When I saw this guy on the backfields back in August of 2023, he sat 93 to 96. He touched 97 miles an hour. Was like 17 to 18 inches of ride. Really good changeup. Was spinning a decent slider as well. And was just getting tons of whiffs, throwing strikes. Was every bit as good, if not better, in some people's eyes than Carlos Legrandjé, his teammate and rotation mate on that team. But he's been injured pretty much every season since 2023. So, 24 totaled 12.1 innings, 25, 19.1. The fastball now is sat like 91 in the games that he has pitched in. We know what it's been when he is healthy and it's all there. So I think he's still a guy that's a little bit underrated just in the sense of you want to gamble on it now that he's probably free, even in deeper dynasty leagues where it's a very, very shallow waiver wire. There's not much out there. I bet Lalonde might be available in a lot of those leagues. So it might be worth a flyer just to see if he comes back strong in 26 and beyond. All right, let's cap it off here. Toronto Blue Jays. I know this is what everybody's been waiting for. The AL, reigning AL champions, a system that I cover, so it's near and dear to my heart. I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to make it easy. I'm going to take RJ Schreck as my 2026 contributor. I'm going to leave you, Trey Savage, make it easy. I like RJ Schreck. I think when you look at, the outfield picture right now in Toronto, there's some mouths to feed, but how much do you really believe in Nathan Lucas? Is Jesus Sanchez going to break through and, provide everyday value when there's guys on his heels? And is Okamoto going to play third base? And is Springer going to stay healthy at DH? And, is Barger going to be the right fielder every day? I think Varsho will be the center fielder. I do think there is a scenario with some injuries that RJ Schreck, who is not on the 40-man roster yet, but is, facing his decision next offseason. I do think he gets added. I think he could get added. I think he could maybe be like a sneaky sleeper here. I'm pushing it a little bit because your Savage is obviously the obvious one, but I figured as the Blue Jays guy, I should take the less obvious answer. So I'm going with Schreck. I believe in the hit tool. It's translated in terms of the contact, the swing decisions, all the way up to AAA. The bat speed isn't great. It's not awful. And some of that, I think, is part of his game in terms of making contact with a variety of different pitch shapes, all that sort of stuff. Pretty good outfielder as well. Can play all three outfield positions. Maybe more of like a high-end 45, but it is a really good hit tool. And I do think there's a chance this guy steps in the big leagues and can hit like 260, 270 with a little bit of pop, run a little bit, and just be a good hitter that kind of fits that Blue Jays mantra of good hit tools and quality at bats. So I'm going to go with RJ Schreck, and I assume you're going with your Savage. So I'll let you talk Trey Savage.
I am. You nice alley-oop there, giving me the easy bucket here. But yeah, Savage, obviously we saw what he did last season, had a historic World Series as a rookie with a guy with such minimal experience, made three starts in the majors, saw the batting ability, saw the raw stuff. Then again, in the playoffs, he was even better. And I think this year, you look, he's someone who they're counting on to be a key contributor to the rotation. Chris Bassett's gone. He's going to have to step in and fill a role, pitching in the middle of that rotation for the entire season. And I don't know if there's a lot to talk about with him because everyone's seen it, but that fast, the combination, the release height, the combination of release height he had and extension is just very unique. I know I've been doing some work on pitchers in the top 100 and he has the highest release height, I think, of anyone over the last 5 years of the data we have. Of top 100 pitching prospects. It's just a very unique angle, and you saw how much trouble it gave hitters. So I think that he's someone that you're looking, if he can have, if he can pitch in the middle of a rotation this year, he's going to be a very valuable player for fantasy.
Do not disagree. All right, so the highest upside in the Blue Jays system, who's your pick? It's kind of an interesting one because I think there's a few answers.
Yeah, this is interesting, and I think you could make the case for your Savage, but I'm gonna zag a little bit and go with JoJo Parker, who was first round pick last year, shortstop out of Mississippi. We've seen Mississippi shortstops are kind of having a renaissance right now, because Connor Griffin, obviously the number one prospect in baseball, was at one time a Mississippi shortstop, but I think Parker, he's got the tools you look for in an FYPD player. And then as a young prototypical shortstop, 6'2", good athlete, projectable frame, strong already, but more projection, potential above average hit and power, more average-ish run. But Is he a shortstop long term? See, maybe it's a third baseman. But either way, if he gets to, you know, above average hitting power, this is a guy who has a chance to be a very, very valuable contributor, both in real life and in fantasy. And I think that the ceiling here is pretty high. You know, you're looking at a potential. The ceiling here is well above average regular, probably. So it's going to time for Young, but I think the weight could be a really big payoff, especially if you can get him early in your FYPD draft.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Parker's a good one. Got him in a few FYPDs so far, and it's kind of a fun year where with the Japanese players and some of those guys, depending on Cody Ponce, some of those guys that might be available for your FYPD, depending upon what the rules are. Sometimes those guys are pushing guys like Parker down a little bit to a spot where maybe you get him at 7 or 8, and that's a great landing spot and a ton of value there, I think, in terms of what the upside is. I'm going to go with the other top middle infielder in this system, also on the top 100. Someone who's had really uneven years, but has been really, really good when he's been good and really, really bad when he's been bad. And that's Arjun Namala. I think if he can consistently put it together, we saw the hit tool take some steps forward despite those struggles. The strikeout rate really never spiked to a level that was concerning. A lot of it, as we talked about on other podcasts, I think was just kind of contact point, getting in front on stuff, not sort of sitting back and kind of catching the barrel cleanly, consistently. Some of it, I think, had to do with his footwork and kind of placement. It's all tweaks that they had to make previously, and we saw what that did in the second half of 2024 and then bled into the beginning of the first half of 2025. I think if you can consistently find that, there's power here, there's speed, there's really good infield defense. Could be a guy that sticks at shortstop for a long time, hits for .250 average with 25 home runs and some stolen bases as well. I do think that Arjun Namala has a ton of upside. We're going to talk underrated player now in the Blue Jays system. I wanted to double up on RJ Schreck. I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to steal your guy in Jake Cook, which I also think is a good one. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Ricky Thiebaud. No, I'm kidding around. Everybody expects me to come in, just knock down the glass and talk about Ricky Thiebaud, but I'm not. I think there's actually a few really good options here. This guy's in the top 10, but I think Jake Bloss is being a little bit underrated. I think when you look at, this is something that longtime fantasy writer, you know, did some podcasts with The Athletic as well, Ian Kahn, had a whole thing about when you add Tommy John guys. And I think it was actually a really good perspective. I'm going to butcher a little bit, but there's a period after they get hurt where the value's at the lowest. But there's also this other period where it's kind of this middle ground where they're like 5 to 6 months out from returning from surgery. And Bloss is kind of in that window right now where he could get some innings at the end of the year, could be really good, is on the 40-man roster, could be a team that's like, hey, we got some older starters. We're going to skip some starts here in August, yada, yada, yada. Bloss could be a guy that comes back into the rotation, looks really good, and then all of a sudden you kind of have a young starter that's on the edge of getting a decent amount of innings and a big innings jump in 2027. So there's a little bit of risk that comes with that, but I do think Bloss is a good one. Ian, finish us off here on this AL East podcast. Who is your underrated Blue Jays prospect?
You did mention already, it is Jake Cook, who was the Blue Jays' third round pick out of Southern Miss last year. And the reason I like Cook is he has a combination of a few things that I think give him a high floor. And then the question is, the ceiling, the upside is going to be determined by how much stronger and how impact ability develops. Because Cook is one of the highest contact rates in all of college baseball last year. It's like above 90% contactability. Really, really good feel for putting the bat on the baseball. The impact is not there at all. it's the barrel percentage is low. The 90th is around 100 miles an hour. His hard hit rate was 25% with metal bats, which is not great. But he's 6'3", 185 pounds, going to a professional weight room. And I think there's some swing changes here that they can make, hopefully to get him to tap into some of his added strength, which obviously, we're making some assumptions here. But the thing that gives him the high floor to me is that he's an 80 speed. Was he a good baseman in college? Not really. Did not steal as many bases as you'd expect for someone with his type of speed, but got 80 speed and he's a plus defender. And if you make contact, steal bases, and play good defense, there's a role for you in the major leagues. I mean, look at Miles Straw, someone on the Blue Jays. Like, he stuck around for a long time doing just that. And I think that Cook has a chance to, you know, get to that type of role. And if he can add some impact, might be even more here. And I just, when I see a 6'3 guy with those type of EVs and that type of impact or lack of impact right now, if you're taking that guy in the third round, you have to think you can kind of fix that. And so I think Cook is represents pretty good value as kind of a later round FYPD sleeper who, you know, getting early, there might be a pretty big reward here. Because if he can even get to like 40 power with that type of contact and speed, that could be a really valuable fantasy contributor.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that's a really good call out. That's why I had him high on our list. I think he's a guy that, you know, could be a little bit sort of underrated, you know, as you talked about. I think that there's maybe more here in elite athlete, somebody that, you know, was a two-way guy that kind of came to hitting late, was primarily a pitcher. You factor all that in, there might even be swing change stuff where this guy gets to like 45 power. And then it's like, you know, good luck. Really good call out there. Thank you, Ian, for stepping in and joining me on this one. We're going to move on to another AL Central division next week. Talk a little bit about those teams. Think you guys got a lot to chew on here. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for subscribing. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.